Live from the Next Title Studio, this is News Talk 670 KBOI. If you're talking about it,
they're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Good morning. Paul J.'s vacation continues. It seems like that guy's going to be off for the rest of the year. I don't know. I don't know how you get that in your contract, by the way, thank you for the laugh, even if it was a pity laugh.
He'll be back January 3rd.
Yeah, he'll be back Tuesday. In fact, we'll all be back Tuesday. We are off again on Monday,
right?
Just so everybody knows. So today and tomorrow, that's it for us. David Allen in for Paul J. Chris Walton still in studio with me.
Should we talk a little Israel?
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about Israel, because this was happening yesterday while the show was going on, and it was an hour and 40 minutes worth of John Kerry talking.
Yeah, and we saw, we have three TV monitors in here, and John Kerry was just talking on all three of them at the time.
And I can only imagine an hour and 40 minutes of John Kerry seems like, I don't know, 3 hours and 40 minutes.
John, you know, even dinner. John Kerry, the Secretary of State, his rebuke of the Israeli government yesterday set off a wave of criticism from lawmakers in both parties, Republicans and Democrats in the U.S. Republicans denounced what they said was the Obama administration's harsh treatment of a steadfast ally, and Democrats signaled that they were uneasy with Mr. Kerry's pressure on Israel, even as they praised the effort to promote Middle East peace. See, that's when you say, I think he's doing a good thing, but I don't like the way he's doing it. In particular, you know, they just really have no idea.
Yeah.
In Europe, however, Kerry's speech was greeted warmly, with officials calling it a courageous and thoughtful effort to salvage the idea of a two-state solution for the Israelis and Palestinians. Still across the Arab world, his harsh words for Israel were met with a collective shrug, coming at the end of 8 years of Obama administration policies that left many in the Middle East frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
On Capitol Hill, hours after Kerry used what may be his last major address to bluntly inform the Israeli Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, that friends need to tell each other the hard truths, he received a reminder of the deep support Israel enjoys in an otherwise sharply divided Congress. While he may not have intended it, I fear Secretary Kerry, in his speech and action at the UN, has emboldened extremists on both sides. That was Chuck Schumer, Senator Chuck Schumer, who is the incoming Senate Democratic leader. A bipartisan chorus of lawmakers upset with President Obama's decision last week to allow the passage of a United Nations resolution condemning Israel's construction of settlements in disputed territory made clear that they were looking past the departing administration. Now, Kerry says, you can't have peace when you keep building new settlements in the disputed territory. And the Israelis are looking at it like, yes, but we don't consider it disputed territory.
Exactly.
It's ours.
It's ours.
So that's kind of why we're doing it. Now, you're thinking that we're going to resolve all of this by giving a bunch of the territory to the new Palestinian state. And that's not in our plan,
well,
said Israel.
Nate had a really good point yesterday afternoon. It's like, if you had a group of people who always wanted to kill you, it's just a gang, let's say, here in Boise, that always wanted to kill you and did everything they could to kill you and all your family and all your friends, would you want those people to move in next door to you?
Not particularly.
Not particularly. So why would the Israelis want the Palestinians right there? Because they still want to obliterate the Israelis, and that will continue. Nothing's going to change that.
As does every other country that borders that area.
That's a very good point, too. Yeah.
Senator Benjamin Cardin of Maryland, the top Democrat on the Foreign Relations Committee, said he shared Kerry's concerns with the lack of forward progress on a two-state solution. But Cardin also said he was unhappy that Obama had not vetoed the United Nations resolution, instead abstaining from the vote. He pledged to explore congressional action that can mitigate the negative implications of it. See, and the way I look at it, this is like in Idaho. If people were coming to the state of Idaho to resolve a difference between people who think that Idaho should just keep all of Idaho or that we should give some of it to Montana.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we'd be like, why? That's not even what we're interested in. Why would we want to do that? Secretary Kerry's speech today was at best a pointless tirade in the waning days of an outgoing administration. That was John McCain.
As part of my criticism was, why did they wait 7 years, 12 months and 27 days to start all of a sudden making peace in the Middle East?
Legacy? Real good question. Legacy? I don't know. Legacy is such a stupid word when it comes to things like that. At worst, it was another dangerous outburst that will further Israel's diplomatic isolation and embolden its enemies.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Elliot Engel of New York, the top Democrat on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, called Kerry's speech gratuitous and wrong. There doesn't seem any purpose to this other than to embarrass Israel, Engel said. It just pained me to watch it. Yeah, and that's a little arrogant, I think, for Kerry to be telling Israel, you know, sometimes friends have to tell each other the hard truth.
Uh-huh.
Like, we think that your enemy should have more of what you have.
Exactly.
And that's our hard truth, to which Netanyahu would say, yeah, I agree with everything except the word truth.
Yeah, I got your hard truth right here. That's what Netanyahu would say.
Yeah.
He was not a happy man yesterday, Benjamin Netanyahu. And he's also got a point when it says, you know what, we really don't need the United States telling us how to deal with peace. And he's right. We should not be throwing that shade at anybody.
Well, you know, to a certain extent, I mean, the U.S. has learned from mistakes and therefore can help other people. But
have we?
Yeah, I don't know.
Have we?
Well, no. Let's put it this way. After Vietnam, people said we had learned from our mistakes, but then we went into the Middle East.
Continue to make those mistakes.
Chances are we haven't.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. 8:45 now at 670 KBOI. Time for a final look at traffic, brought to you by MazTech Automotive. It's cold out there. Get a checkup at MazTech on State Street in Boise. Keep your vehicle running trouble-free. They service all makes and models and offer a NAPA nationwide warranty. Call today at 385-0339 or maz-tech.com. Here's Ron O'Brien.
Another escape attempt from the Canyon County Jail tent facility. Details straight ahead on 670 KBOI.
Remember, you are listening to Idaho Talks Live on 670 KBOI.
8:51 now at 670 KBOI. David Allen, Chris Walton with you.
Does that surprise you when someone escapes from a tent?
No.
No, I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
It actually surprises me that more people stay in the tent. That's what usually.
Well, I mean, the whole point of a minimum security prison facility of any kind is that you have people there that you think you can trust.
Yes.
Usually, I mean, you can trust them not to leave, you know, people who have been convicted of embezzlement or something.
Yeah, exactly. The white collar criminal oftentimes doesn't want to escape, as opposed to the serial killer who is always looking for ways to escape.
You can ruin a lot of lives without hitting anybody in the head with a club.
Yes,
and then they put you in minimum security prisons. But then, you know, if you steal a loaf of bread, what is it?
Ponzi schemes.
Jean Valjean was in prison for 19 years.
Yeah,
for that,
so. Ponzi schemes might be worse than serial killers.
Well, yeah, I mean people invest their life savings and lose it.
Yeah, yeah,
and they lose it to a crook, and you know. If you were one of those, I mean, you'd be pushing for the death penalty.
Yeah, but like you and I were talking about this morning, that if your objective is to escape from prison, technically he did. He got over the wall or out of his tent or however.
Yeah, and that was my question.
Yeah, so
if you get over the wall of the prison and they catch you on the other side of the wall, have you escaped or not?
Technically, you've escaped.
You have not escaped custody, but you did escape from the prison.
You did escape from the prison because you're outside the walls.
Good work there. You just should have been a faster runner.
It only lasted like 5 minutes, but hey.
Right.
You did achieve your goal.
You Shawshanked your way out of there.
Exactly. We're talking yesterday about John Kerry's speech about the current administration and their hopes for peace in the Middle East, and that it has to be two different states. It has to be a Palestinian state and an Israeli state.
Well, I guess that would make the Palestinians happy. Well, it
wouldn't.
Would it really make them happy? No, it wouldn't.
They want all of Israel, too.
Yeah.
Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's Middle East speech on Wednesday was biased against Israel. In a statement in English, that's when you know that Netanyahu's serious.
Well, that's when you know he wants us to understand.
Yeah,
what
he's
saying.
Doesn't want anybody to misinterpret what he's saying.
Let me make myself perfectly clear.
That's a terrible, terrible Samuel L. Jackson.
It was Nixon.
Oh, that's pretty good then. Netanyahu said, like the Security Council's resolution that Secretary Kerry advanced in the UN, his speech tonight was skewed against Israel. The Israeli leader said Kerry obsessively dealt with settlements, which the United States strongly opposes in the speech. Netanyahu accused Kerry of barely touching upon the root of the conflict, Palestinian opposition to a Jewish state in any boundaries.
And Jewish opposition to a Palestinian state.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I mean, and like Nate was saying yesterday, this isn't something that's been going on since 1947. It's not like you just have 70 years worth of anger here. There's thousands of years of hatred and anger, generation after generation and after generation hating each other. You're not going to get it by doing an hour and 40-minute speech.
Here's the question that I ask people all the time, because somebody called up the other day and they said, you know, it's really the Palestinians' land. They had it for 1,500 years or whatever. You know, it belongs to them, blah, blah, blah. At what year in history? It's like the people who say, well, you know, the Europeans came over and stole North America from the Indians. At what year was everybody where they were supposed to be? Do you know what I mean by that?
I don't think so, no.
In history. Because they say, okay, well, you know, the Anglos and the Saxons actually came from Germany and they invaded England, and then that's why England has what they have, and then the Romans ended up there and people did this, and somebody migrated from this area to that area. And any time you have somebody who has already created kind of a civilization, in other words, you know, permanent buildings and things like that, and they sail off to another country that hasn't done that, they tend to conquer the other country that hasn't done that.
Yes, they do.
It happened in Africa. It happened in Australia. It happened in India. And it happened also in North and South America. The conquerors came in and conquered because it's what they do. But which ones were wrong and which ones were okay? You know what I mean? In what year? Was it the year 1400 where everyone was where they were supposed to be and everybody after that was evil if they moved into a new land?
Yeah.
Or was it before that?
I would think it was year zero.
You know, even Christians should know in the Bible it says to go forth and multiply and fill up the entire earth.
Yes. But there are going to be people who don't want you to come into their country and be Christian and multiply.
Or anything else.
Or any other religion that isn't their religion that they've had for X number of...
Do algebra or whatever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
And I don't know. To me, the Middle East this situation is never going to be solved.
Yeah.
You could make two states and it's not going to matter. Palestinians are going to still want to kill Israelis and Israelis are still going to want to kill Palestinians or protect themselves from being killed by killing Palestinians. So I don't know that even if you made two states, nobody's going to be happy again.
True. And again, sometimes it just feels like this is one of those things in a long list of things around the world that maybe Americans should just have the opportunity to watch on TV and comment about.
Yes.
But there's no reason for us to go there.
Yeah. It's a mess. It's a mess. All right. We got coming up national news. Then we've got local news with Rick. And then after that, I want to talk a little bit about ACHD and snow removal. It's 8:57 on 670 KBOI.
If you're talking about it...
They're getting nervous, and they should be nervous.
You know, I kind of disagree with what you're saying.
We're talking about it.
You know, I think it's kind of great that you guys have that duality.
This is Idaho Talks Live with Chris Walton and Paul J. Schneider on the News and Talk of Idaho, 670 KBOI.
Welcome back to the show. 906, David Allen in for Paul J. today and tomorrow. Chris Walton with me in the Next Title studio.
Doing a little thing
we do called the show.
Yeah, I got a few instant messages.
Please
here
do.
Clear up from the past
hour. It's all good.
First of all, Dave, a boy, is he kind of unrelated to what we were talking about, but related to the events of the day. He says, I was shocked to hear that Harrison Ford had something to say about Carrie Fisher. I was shocked because I thought Harrison Ford was dead. The last I heard, he died in a small plane crash. There was a whole story about it, and I never heard anything on the news or anywhere else that he is still alive. Does anybody know for sure what his current condition is right now?
All good.
He's currently alive.
Alive.
He didn't die in a plane crash.
No.
He's been in a plane crash or two.
Broke his leg in the last one.
Mm-hmm.
Crashed on a golf course and broke his leg.
But he didn't die, and the reason that you didn't hear on the news that he wasn't dead is because that isn't a news story.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could do a news story every day about who isn't dead.
Yeah.
But it's more interesting, I think, to really hear about the ones that are.
Yeah.
But yeah, his current condition is alive.
Still
and he,
breathing.
He, just like Carrie Fisher, will be in the next Star Wars movie, but she won't be in the one after that because they haven't, you know, shot the film yet.
Unless they do a CGI.
Always a possibility.
Yeah.
And, you know, why not just animate the whole thing?
Sure.
Bill of Boise says, this country is not old enough to have made all the mistakes it takes to start learning from them. We are very young as far as countries go. In the grand scheme of things, we can learn from others, but it seems we would rather be in a class of our own. Maybe that's good. Maybe that's bad.
Yes, it is both.
It's also like probably most people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many people do you know that listen to everything their parents ever said and therefore never made the same mistakes their parents did?
17.
Okay, 17 people total in the entire world.
Yep, that's it.
Of 7 billion people.
Yeah.
All right, and Mark of Boise says, here is a little explanation of where people are supposed to be. The answer to that is that the human being is built to move or migrate, so it's natural for us to sprawl out. That's the way I see it anyway. As far as the land dispute, I think the UN should step in and draw a line down the middle of the sand and give each half to the two who are fighting about it, then leave a strip for ISIS and all the terrorist nations right up the center. Then they can all blow each other up all they like. And they don't have to bother the rest of the world. You know, and you're not the only one who feels that way.
Yeah.
If the United States doesn't seem to have a solution for how to bring peace to one part of the world, there are plenty of people who say, let's just not go to that part of the world anymore.
Yeah. And
however, with modern commerce, it's kind of difficult to ignore any part of the world.
Yes. And if, like he says, people, or maybe it was the instant message before, human beings are built to move and travel around. But then if you start cutting off the places that are too dangerous to travel around, I'm not leaving this studio.
Yeah, good point. I mean, I'll leave long enough to go back home, but that's about it.
For all I know, I could die at my home. I have a dog that bites people sometimes.
Good
See?
Point. All right.
Or like you had a football player who fell down. He's 39. He fell down. I fall down a lot.
Yeah, former Buffalo Bill and Atlanta Falcon died yesterday of a fall. Or this morning, actually, of a fall.
I'm going to be like a Batman evil villain here and be a little two-faced. So I don't need people to call in and say...
So Harvey Dent.
Then. Yes, I'll be Harvey Dent. I don't need people to call in and say, hey, you're being two-faced about this. I get that.
Right.
So it's been the snowiest winter since I've been here. And I know it's a very small sample size because it's only 5.5 years. And I'm sure there are people who could say, well, back in '06, there was snow to my butt.
47.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't here in 47.
86.
So I wasn't here in 86. But since I've been here, this is the snowiest winter we've had.
Okay.
Without a doubt. Because the storms are like every other day, it seems like. You know, so you've got snow on the ground, it stays cold, and then more snow comes on top of it.
And I think last year, the biggest snowfall we actually had was for the whole year was around Thanksgiving, wasn't
yes.
it?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It was early, and then it was nice the rest of the time. So last Friday, we got quite the storm. And depending on where you were, here in Boise, I know in Nampa and Caldwell it was much worse, but here in Boise, depending on where you were, it was anywhere from 4 to 6 inches of snow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of snow to me.
Sure.
So I'm praising ACHD because when I left the building to go home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, the freeway was really very drivable. And I think they did a really good job on the freeways.
Okay.
Of clearing the snow and making them drivable.
Now, one quick change to what you're talking about.
All right.
The one thing the ACHD isn't in charge of is the freeway.
No, exactly. That's because that's the state that does that. So what does ACHD cover?
All the roads in the county, with the exception of Eagle Road, which is a state highway.
Okay.
All the other roads, like the road, you know, whatever street you live on and the side street and the adjoining street, all of those are supposed to be cleared by the ACHD.
Okay, so who's in charge of Fairview? Who's in charge
that
of
would be the ACHD.
Chinden?
Yeah.
Who's in charge of
Ada County Highway District?
Okay. What the hell's going on with all that? The snow covering small streets and residential neighborhoods. And here's the thing. I don't want them to come clear out around my apartment complex. I get that. I don't need that.
Okay.
I understand that when I drive on those streets, it's going to be slick.
Right.
I was driving on Emerald yesterday, and this isn't all about me, but I'm giving this as an example. I was driving on Emerald yesterday, almost a week after the snow fell, and I was approaching whatever stoplight that was just before you get to Americana and that whole area and 15th. And I kind of started tapping my brakes because that's what you're used to doing.
So you were up there near Morris Hill Cemetery.
I was just past... and Morrison Park.
Okay.
So I was coming down because I'd gotten Sonic for lunch.
You were coming down Americana.
Yeah, I was coming down Americana. Yeah, because it's Emerald, then it turns into Americana.
Right.
So I was coming down Americana and just past Ann Morrison Park, and I'm just tapping my brakes. My car starts to slide.
Right.
And so I steer into the slide, because that's what you're supposed to do, and I'm still sliding. And as I'm sliding, I go, one, two, three, four, five. There's five cars up there.
Right.
Wonder how many of them I'm going to hit. And I slide and slide, and I'm still tapping, pumping the brakes, which is what you're supposed to do, and I come to a stop. But I'm in the, I'm actually in the left lane,
right.
And by the time I stop, I'm in the turn lane.
Okay, so you didn't actually hit any other cars?
Never hit anybody
so
else.
So thank you, ACHD.
Except,
oh.
A week later, why am I still sliding on Americana / Emerald?
I don't know, but since you didn't hit another car.
I guess I just don't.
It's the results that count, really, I think.
Because Friday, they did a, you know,
yeah.
They were doing a great job of staying ahead of things. But then you had 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Most businesses were closed on Monday. Mm-hmm. You had 3 days to try to get the major thoroughfares in the city.
Well, one of those days was Christmas, and my guess is they had that day off, too.
Well, then they probably had Monday off, too, which a lot of places did, which could be another rant I could have in a minute if you want me to.
No, could have been.
I guess I don't understand. And Nicole Dubois says the snow covering small streets and residential neighborhoods will stay there until it melts. The district has 37 snowplows clearing roadways in the county.
Mm-hmm.
But with more than 4,000 miles of roadways to maintain, the district focuses on higher traffic roadways.
Well, yeah.
Well, wouldn't like, that
well,
be
like
Emerald,
day,
Americana, Fairview?
I think just day before yesterday, I saw kind of a road grader type thing over on 27th. Well, they had done State Street, they'd done Chinden, they'd done Fairview and all this, and they were getting to the side roads like, you know, Mitchell and 27th and all these different ones around town, probably Emerald at that point as well. But it just takes a while, and part of the reason for that was it just kept snowing for several days.
But it didn't. It snowed Friday, but it didn't snow. It flurried a little bit Saturday, but it hasn't snowed since Sunday.
Okay.
You've had 5 days.
Well, and they've cleared a lot of stuff. I mean, they haven't been down my street either.
Well, but again, I know they're not going to get the street that I drive on to get to my apartment. I don't want that.
Okay.
I understand the sun should melt that.
But
Fairview
but America.
And Eustick
okay.
and Americana and Cole and Curtis, those are all streets that should be 100% clear by now before the next storm hits Sunday
right.
when it's going to be below zero Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
What do you think the reason is that they weren't completely finished?
I don't know.
Okay, you don't know. But if you had to guess.
If I had to guess, I would say there's not enough money budgeted for it.
Okay.
Which doesn't make any sense to me in Idaho, where it snows usually quite a bit.
Well, no, actually, in this part of Idaho, it doesn't snow as much as you'd think.
I would rather you budget more money for road clearing that you don't need.
Like, it snows more in the Midwest than it does here.
Well, sure, understandable, yes. Because there's no mountains in the Midwest to slow it down, as opposed to the mountains here. I would rather you budget $2 billion for snow removal and then not need it so you can shift it to parks and other stuff, then to budget $900,000 for snow removal, and after 4 days go, well, we burned through the budget. I don't know what we're going to do.
Yeah. First of all, county commissioners don't even know the word or the meaning of that word billion because they haven't gotten there yet.
I know. I was being ridiculous in going high.
Well,
I would rather you budget more money for snow removal than less.
What you're saying, though, is be sure to budget plenty of money for something that happens every few years.
But what I'm saying is at the end of the winter, if you go, oh, look, we didn't need it because we didn't get any snow, then you take that money that you've budgeted in the year 2016 and put it to parks and put it to waterways and put it to everywhere. You don't just leave it there.
I don't think they do leave it anywhere. I think it actually goes to wherever it's needed.
Well,
but what I'm saying is that that's like the county budget every year.
For a winter like it's now, it's not enough money.
Okay.
So budget more money. That's what I'm saying, because then you have more money for the rest of the stuff.
I will agree with you on one thing. As far as I know, in the Constitution, what is it? Defense, the court systems, and roads are the basic things that the government is supposed to be doing. So, why don't you make those your top three priorities?
That's all I wanted to say.
And, of course, you'd like roads to be number one, I'm guessing.
No. Defense is pretty big for me, too.
Yeah. Defense, then roads.
Yeah. 9:17. We'll be back with more on 670 KVOI.
This is Idaho Talks Live. Today at 1, listen to Savage on 670 KVOI.
Or a facsimile of Savage.
Yeah.
9:23, KVOI keyword is plow. P-L-O-W. Pilo. That's my new rap name, Pilo.
Okay. Yeah.
Plow. Go to KVOI.com, enter the keyword plow, get your 5,000 rewards points. Let's go to Blake in Caldwell. Blake, you're on 670 KVOI. How are you, sir?
Oh, excellent. I'm a little cold, but So
you're going to get a lot cold next week, brother, so bundle up.
That's what I'm hearing. At any rate, I got on Nate Shellman yesterday afternoon, and I told Nate I felt that I had the perfect solution in regards to this Israeli thing.
What is it?
That we moved the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And then this morning I noticed on Fox News that I must be in really good company because that was a suggestion made by our president-elect.
Now,
really?
What does that help? Are people less likely to attack Jerusalem?
Yes. Basically, if the U.S. embassy is there, okay, in that area, then first of all, it shows support for Israel. And second of all, if they do something, you know, that's totally out of line, then we have all the legal justification and et cetera to take action.
No, but I think you're right, though, about Jerusalem being less prone to attack simply because it's a holy city to Christians, Jews, and Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah, you know, that's where the wall, that's where everything is. And it's, you know, if we had a presence there, i.e. our embassy, I think it would be a tremendous deterrent. And it would show the support that's required, unlike this criminal administration we have in place now.
All right, Blake, thanks for checking in. Stay warm and dry out there, brother. Thanks.
I think this is Dave writing in because it says the person's name is Harrison Ford again, but I think that's the topic.
Ah, okay.
But maybe it's Harrison Ford again of Boise. It says, about Mr. Ford, it was the news that told me he was dead in the first place, so I thought it would only be right for the news to correct itself. I don't know when the news actually said he was dead, but on behalf of the rest of the news, I'll correct it. He's not.
None of the news I listen to. But yes, we're sorry that we got it wrong. And Harrison Ford, still alive.
Boise Rabble Rouser of Boise says both you and Netanyahu have it wrong. Organizations governing the Palestinians have supported a two-state solution since at least 2007. At the Annapolis Conference in 2007, three major parties, the Palestinians, Israel, and the USA, that is, agreed on a two-state solution as the outline for negotiations. However, the summit failed to achieve an agreement. I think it's probably because they can't decide on how large that second state should be.
Yeah.
Palestinians did acknowledge the Israeli right to become a nation as long as it's mandated by the UN. It's true, there are radicals on both sides that advocate for the destruction, but the same exists in most conflicts.
Understand. So what we're saying is that even if they come up with a two-state thing and everybody agrees to it and they make all that.
Is there going to be peace?
No.
Maybe not.
All right. Coming up, we've got news with Rick Worthington. Then we're going to talk about wages increasing. What's behind it? 9:26 now at 670 KBOI. 9:36 at 670 KBOI. David Allen, Chris Walton with you. You had a story.
Two different guys, not just one with a long name.
Oh, I thought that was my name. David Allen, Chris Walton.
All right.
You had a story about wages increasing and what was behind it all.
Still do.
All right.
The Great Recession ended 7.5 years ago. A lot of people didn't realize that, like people who don't have a job.
Exactly.
And job gains have been steady since, but greater demand for workers is only starting to increase pay. And that's something I kind of noticed. They said, oh, gosh, you know, everything is up. Okay, for who? You know,
yeah.
Or, excuse me, for whom? The increases are still relatively modest and the data still mixed. In October, for example, the Labor Department reported average hourly earnings increased at a rate of 2.8%, the highest since the middle of 2009. But wage growth slowed in November. A separate report this month showed the cost of labor, another measure of wage growth, increased especially during the spring of this year. What's driving the recent wage growth is unclear. Now, Michael Strain is the director of economic policy studies at the American Enterprise Institute. He said the mystery has been that we've seen a decline in the unemployment rate, but we haven't seen the kind of increases in wage growth that we would expect.
Okay.
So, in other words, people are getting hired, but they're getting hired for nothing or next to nothing. He speculates that until recently, employers figured they didn't have to increase wages because in recent years, so many people had stopped working or looking for work. Businesses kind of have the sense that the missing workers are out there. They are a pool of available workers, so that has, I think, suppressed wage growth. Well, yeah, I mean, if there's lots of competition for a job, they don't have to offer you more money to get you to come over.
Exactly. It's a, what's the word I'm thinking of? It's a, not cause and effect. It's a...
A need-based or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay.
Let's go with that.
Simply
be,
it's,
I can't think of the word. I apologize.
You know, we don't have to go out and search for people.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can just offer a little bit of money and somebody will take the job and probably they'll be qualified. This year, that finally appears to be changing, and Strain and others believe wage growth will continue into next year, chiefly because the supply of labor is declining. The unemployment rate at 4.6% is near a level economists say is close to a natural unemployment rate. New state and local minimum wage laws are another reason wages are rising. Since 2014, 21 states in Washington, D.C. changed their minimum wage laws. Last month, voters approved initiatives in Arizona, Colorado, Maine, and Washington state, and more increases are expected in the coming year. But as we know, when the wages for everyone go up, your buying power doesn't increase.
No, of course not.
It's just your way of trying to catch up. Strain says those increases have a ripple effect beyond just the lowest paid workers. Many union contracts, for example, benchmark to the minimum wage. There's no question minimum wage increases cause wage growth to accelerate, he said. How much of that can be attributed to minimum wage increases is an open question. In Angie Godoy's case, minimum wage hikes made a big difference. She started working as a McDonald's drive-through cashier 3 years ago, making $8 an hour.
Okay.
Since then, the L.A. City Council raised the minimum wage to $10.50. Without the city's new law, Godoy says she would only have seen a tiny increase. Working 3 years there, I only got a 10-cent raise, she said. Godoy, who participated in fast food workers' strikes demanding a $15 hourly wage, said that as her wages increased, so did wages for those in more senior positions. Andrew Chamberlain, chief economist for online job site Glassdoor, says Godoy is right. Like dominoes up the pay scale, you see wage hikes all across the board, he says. Maybe he does.
My response to her would have been, if you're making $8 an hour in 3 years, you're only going to get 10 cent raise. Quit that damn job and find another one.
Yeah.
I don't know what to tell you. I hate the minimum wage.
Minimum wage isn't the biggest factor, Chamberlain says, citing Glassdoor's data that show the most in-demand jobs are those whose pay is increasing the fastest. Truck drivers, construction workers, and machine operators. All three groups that all used to be unionized.
Mm-hmm.
And when the unions began to be busted and so many right-to-work states came into being, the wages at those jobs started to dwindle a bit.
Exactly.
It says that is not true for some white-collar jobs. Sales jobs and financial analysts, for example, those jobs are losing ground.
Mm-hmm.
Clever coders are finding ways to program around them, Chamberlain says. Insurance agents today are largely being replaced by self-service insurance websites. David Levine, CEO of the American Sustainable Business Council, a progressive advocacy group, says increasing pay can be a way to address another labor market problem, low productivity growth. And exactly, why would we start paying more money when our productivity is low?
Yep.
With that retention, they're also getting employees that are more committed to the business. Therefore, productivity goes up, he argues. Simply put, you pay more to get more. Now, we knew that part. And an employer, like a consumer, anybody knows that if they are paying more, they should be getting higher quality.
100% agree.
Exactly. So, it's the minimum wage. The only thing that I will say about it negatively is that it does get rid of competition, you know, because seriously, if you pit five people and say, okay, here are the raises, here's the amount of money we're going to give in raises this year, and we're going to give all of it to whichever of you is best.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there'd be competition.
Sure, there would be.
But
sure,
if you tell them, okay, at the end of the year, everybody gets a dollar raise. Okay.
All right. Well, I'll just come in and do the bare minimum then.
Sure,
because I know I'm getting my bucks, so what does it matter?
You know, what's the point?
But if I could get all $5 by kicking ass and taking names, that's what I'm doing the rest of the year.
Yeah. And this happens in a lot of, like your communist countries where people realize that the harder they work, the more work they keep being given.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that happens.
For the same amount or less pay.
Yeah.
Which is not what they're looking for.
There's no way to get ahead. There's no way. And if you're working hard, then you're doing it for personal pride or family pride or whatever.
All right. Steve in Boise, you're on 670 KBOI. How are you?
Doing good. How are you guys?
We are doing very well. Thank you, sir.
Good. You're in warm weather, so
indoors
is good. You're inside, so it's good.
It's not that warm in this studio, Steve. Quit jumping to conclusions, brother.
You know, I hear a lot about this minimum wage, and you know, what a person needs to do in life is improve himself.
Or herself.
Or herself, exactly. You know, you can start. I mean, when I started, I was looking for like a quarter for, it took me an hour to clean my dad's bathroom at his mobile station down there. But, you know, you just work. That's the first thing you have to do. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're productive, you can make more money. If you work by the piece, you can actually regulate your income by how much you produce. And we're getting a lot of this jittery talk in economics now about minimum wage, and I think people are confused. A rock is worth nothing because there's so many of them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take that rock and you market it and you call it a pet rock and put it in the box, you can make that thing worth something.
Yeah, now it's worth $15, exactly.
Exactly. And it's that utility, what you add to that product that really should increase the value of that product. If you take a product and you just move it somewhere, transportation is a cost of that. But if you're scalping money off the top and somebody else will give a cheaper value,
mm-hmm.
that's where you'll go. You'll go to the cheaper value if it's the same lock.
Oh, yeah. And if you're running a business and you're used to making a certain amount of profit, you know, whatever the percentage is, a certain amount of profit per year, and those profits start to dwindle, you don't just accept it and move on.
No,
you know, if you're running the business, you change the look or the ways of the business in such a way that you can operate more cheaply and make the same amount of profit that you've been used to. You don't just take the hit.
Exactly. And you know, that's what happens when you start adding things like government and insurance and these things that add to the overhead
mm-hmm.
of that product. And the more governments you have, the more insurance you have, the higher your cost's going to be. And you can still get the same product without the government and the insurance if you find the right source. And that's, you know, what we're up against when you have a competitive world. If you can take out the extra costs in the production of that product, whatever it be, then that's how you make money, because that way you can put that money in your pocket instead of giving it to the scalpers.
All right, Steve, thanks for checking in today. We appreciate it, man. I'm going to agree with pretty much all of that. Because I just don't like the minimum wage.
Well,
it takes
and
away
it's
complete
like,
competition.
And it's like what we said about Obamacare. I mean, if you want Obamacare to work perfectly, then the people who run the insurance companies would have had to take a huge hit and make considerably lower profits.
Yep.
And oddly enough, the people in that business didn't want to do that.
I don't know why that is. It's very strange to me. Randy, hang on for me. 9:46. We'll get to you next on 670 KBOI. Thank you very much, Rick. 9:51 now. Let's head out to the Magic Valley and talk to Randy. You're on with David and Chris. How are you, sir?
Good, gentlemen. Quickly, the 50,000-watt blowtorch KBOI. I'm 30 miles from Snowville, Utah, going to Salt Lake, and I can hear you crystal clear.
Fantastic. Nice. Thank you.
A little station that could.
Hey, as far as, you know, businesses, you know, when you take away regulation and taxes, you know what happens? Businesses grow, and guess what they do? They hire more people.
Yep.
And they pay them a real wage, and these people see a future in there, and they start to progress and grow, and they care. But when you're squeezed down by tax and regulation and this Obama administration's philosophy, you know, you get 9 million jobs that are minimum wage or something else, and no man can support his family with it, see? And so it's just, you know, turn the people loose. It's just like I had a guy tell me, he said, God, just let us go. Turn us loose. Get off our cage and let us start creating jobs and being innovative. You know, you see people that start a business and you say, my gosh, I don't even know if they're ever going to make it. Well, 12 years later, this guy is so busy, he can't keep up hardly. And guess what? He's got all these full-time employees. He pays them well. He's happy. It's called Economics 101. And you see, when we have people, I have one more quick point. There's a construction site up in Pocatello, and that apparently there was a history there, some environmental problem, and I'm not going to get into any more than that, but the new guys that bought the land and have cleaned it up and are building and constructing a new fertilizer plant said that the EPA and other federal agencies just sit there in their trucks waiting for them to make a mistake, because I guess it's because they can or what. I mean, I say to myself, what kind of a government does this to the people out here creating the jobs? I'm going to hang up. Thanks.
All right, Randy. Thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Well, and there's always a duality in government, that they want to make it as pleasant as possible for the people who live in, you know, whatever they're governing, be it the city, the state, the county, whatever. On the other hand, they also want to make sure that there's nobody exploiting the system.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you build a factory, they want to make sure that you're not polluting the area's water source.
Yes.
And stuff like that. So some protection of the environment is necessary, because there have been businesses that in the name of profit have simply ruined entire areas. It doesn't happen all the time, but the EPA makes sure that it doesn't happen. But there are plenty of people who think that that would be sort of like if a parent, when you're a kid, told you to clean your room, and then you went into the room, and the parent was already standing in there going, I'm waiting, when are you going to do this?
Yeah.
You know, they stand there, and they impede everything that you want to do as
exactly.
a businessman. I mean, the EPA.
Yeah.
Rather than just setting you free and letting you give it a try.
Yeah. There's got to be a happy medium in there, from making sure the factory doesn't pollute
yeah.
to making sure it's impossible for the factory to even create jobs
well,
and
exactly.
do their business.
Kent of Boise says more budget means higher taxes. Where do you put the snow they are removing from the streets? Get better tires or a car that is better in the snow. Budget for better tires and a new car. So he doesn't think the ACHD needs more money.
But that's not my job. That's government's job.
On the other hand, it could be yours. Personal responsibility.
I did buy good tires last year, by the way.
Rude Pundit of Boise says, how much more are you willing to pay in property taxes or rent increases for rapid snow removal over ACHD's 2,100 miles of roads? Or what budget would you cut to have a large standing fleet of snow removal equipment, platoons of trained operators standing by to rapidly remove snow to your standard 2 to 4 times a year? Would you cut road maintenance or improve current roads? Hope not.
I'd stop chip sealing every other year.
Is that right?
Yeah. Roads that are fine.
Bob of Meridian says, let's take your last caller's idea up another level and move the UN headquarters to Jerusalem.
I'll back that.
Let those buffoons in the UN see what it's like to live next to the Palestinian barbarians.
Up next, something to think about with Mike Rogers, brought to you by the Boise Church of Christ, located at 2000 North El Dorado. Find more about the group at boisechurch.org. The Boise Church of Christ, where church is family. Have a good Thursday. Chris and I will be here to finish out the week and the year on Friday. Have a great day on 670 KBOI.
Now, something to think about with Mike Rogers.
When I was a young FBI agent in Chicago, I used to enjoy helping the fugitive squad arrest criminals that had found their way to the Windy City. All the reasons you join the FBI, catching bad guys, kicking in doors. Sometimes criminals could surprise you at how dumb they were. Many a fugitive has been caught by a ruse of a promise of free cable for a year, or you've won a microwave, come and pick it up. But I couldn't help but chuckle at a state of Maine man who gave himself away to the cops who were looking for him. Seems our criminal mastermind was sending out social media messages telling people exactly where he was. The messages had tipped police he was at his house. Once they were there, they were having some difficulty locating him. As they were just about to give up, the fugitive sends another message. This one detailing that the police were in his house and he was hiding in a cabinet to avoid arrest. Tweeting and crime just don't mix. Something to think about. I'm Mike Rogers.